Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. On Friday, 18th of April, Pope Benedict XVI becomes the third pope to address the United Nations at its New York headquarters, doing so on the occasion of the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. But as we know, Benedict XVI wasn't the first pope to address the United Nations. It all began with Paul VI, who made history by becoming the first Roman pontiff to address the General Assembly of this international body. But I won't give too much away. If you want to know more about the popes addressing the United Nations, stay tuned as I bring you a bird's eye view of these visits, with sound from our archives as well as impressions of some of those who were there. Watch a change of pace and tone. It was October 1965 when, in a groundbreaking gesture, Paul VI, the first pope ever to visit the United States, addressed the General Assembly of the United Nations for the first time in history.
L'humanité devra mettre fin à la guerre, ou c'est la guerre qui mettra fin à l'humanité. Il n'est pas besoin de longs discours pour proclamer la finalité suprême de cette institution.
He did so exactly 20 years after the founding document of this international body was officially ratified, in the aftermath of 6 years of war. As I discovered among those present at this event was Cardinal John Foley, who at the time was a young student priest in journalism at Columbia University. Not so long ago, I asked him to put this moving moment into context for us.
I was assigned to cover his appearance there. It was a very historic occasion, and Pope Paul made, in French, an impassioned plea for peace. Jamais la guerre, jamais plus la guerre. Never war, no more war.
Jamais plus la guerre, jamais plus la guerre. C'est la paix. La paix qui doit garder le destin des peuples et de toute l'humanité.
I wondered what kind of welcome this apparently austere-looking first pilgrim pope received as he invited the representatives of nations to respect that pact uniting them, that oath to change the future history of the world.
It was stirring. You could see that the people there were deeply touched. Even some of the people from communist states felt the power of what he was saying. It was also, a high point for the Catholic Church in the United States, because a pope had never visited the United States before. And it was a marvelous experience in the church in the United States, which was probably at its most structurally strong. There hadn't begun to be the shrinking of the school system. The number of priests and sisters was probably the greatest that it had ever been in its history. And it seemed to be not only a visit of the Pope to the United Nations, but in a sense a ratification of the strength and goodness of American Catholicism. And I was very impressed by that, because he recognized the high level of religious practice, the deep prayer life, the profound belief of American Catholics, and their excellent formation in Catholic schools at that period.
Because he was very, very modern pope, no doubt. I mean, he was thinking ahead. I think that came right from his childhood, when you're conversing not in terms of what happens today, but what was going to happen tomorrow, and how what you're doing can influence what's happening tomorrow. That's the whole trend.
The late Monsignor Carol Abbing, the Irish-born founder of Boys Town, who enjoyed close ties with the United States, was also a good friend of Paul VI. He once told me how he accompanied the Pope on that occasion, painting a picture of this Pope so often described as brilliant, but bafflingly ill at ease on public occasions. it seems, erroneously.
I was present, actually, when he came into the Assembly of the United Nations. And I think it was one of the, moment of tension. Before he came in to the Assembly, there was a feeling of tenseness, of dissipation. I don't say worry, but, you know, what impact will this have? I mean, after all, the Pope is in foreign territory, you might say. He's coming in front of people who like him, who don't like him, who like the Church, who are opposed to the Church, opposed to the philosophy, thinking of the Church, and he's going in and he's going to speak. So I think everybody is tense. And then he came in, self-possessed, but very delicately, you see, walked in. And there's a kind of rustle over the people. Everybody's looking. I mean, even the most, blasé men of state are. And he walks up to the middle, you see, and then the question of where he's going to sit, and he's told where to sit, you see. And normally the Pope will go to the centre, you see. No, and this doesn't concern him the slightest, you see. And then he spoke with, again, I keep on using the word simplicity. It was that, you see, very directness.
Vous enseignez aux hommes la paix. L'ONU est la grande école où l'on reçoit cette éducation. Et nous sommes ici.
With tremendous impact. I felt this so much so because I felt that, you know, along with all these other very important people, people thinking with from different continents, from different religious thinking, philosophy of life, different political ambitions, ethnic. And here is this man, very much alone, and everybody's scrutinizing him. He is sure of himself, sure as a priest, sure as a Christian, and sure as Pope. He has a job to do, and he's happy. He's happy. I don't think he was worried in the slightest. Probably the only person there who wasn't, you see.
A decade and a half later, another Roman pontiff was to follow in the footsteps of Paul VI, the pontiff from Poland, whose stage presence no one doubted. As you'll certainly have guessed, it was John Paul II. For the record, on the first of his two visits to the United Nations headquarters. Once again, it was October, and once again, Cardinal John Foley was present, this time acting as English language press secretary for the event.
The second was in 1979, when Pope John Paul II made his visit to Ireland, the United States, and the United Nations. And that was a tremendous privilege to be involved in that. And to be more intimately involved, I guess you could say, in the preparation for the visit and the distribution of texts to journalists, in trying to explain to journalists around the country what the Pope was doing. So that was a fascinating experience, and the presence of a Pope who came from Eastern Europe and was a symbol of resistance against atheistic communism and against all systems which did not recognize the dignity of the human person as a child of God was a stirring experience. The visit of Pope Paul VI was stirring because it was the first time a pope had come, and he made an excellent presentation on behalf of peace. The second appearance of a pope, that of Pope John Paul II, was perhaps even more powerful because this time the pope spoke in English, and also the roots from which he came were somewhat different, and it gave an even more profound symbolic value to his presence and to his words.
Every human being living on earth is a member of a civil society, of a nation, many of them represented here.
Those represented heard Pope John Paul highlight the human dimension of the work of the United Nations. However the political and social situations may change, he stressed, the United Nations must stay true to its commitment to serve, first and foremost, the needs of individual human beings. And he prayed that it would always remain the supreme forum of peace and justice for all people.
Each one of you, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, represents a particular state, system, and political structure, but what you represent above all are individual human beings. You are all representatives of men and women, of practically all the people of the world, individual men and women, communities and peoples, who are living the present phase of their own history, and who are also part of the history of humanity as a whole. This relationship is what provides the reason for all political activity, whether national or international, for, in the final analysis, this activity comes from man, is exercised by man, and is for man.
Years on, Pope John Paul returned to the United Nations for the second time. Once again, it was the month of October, and more significantly so than ever. This time, his visit coincided with a special anniversary, half a century since the founding document of this international body was ratified. In October, as you'll recall. But all those years on, that initial spirit of celebration was tempered by doubt. Let's recall for a moment how, following the high hopes for a better world, directly after the demise of the repressive communist regimes, when the United Nations was held up as an independent arbiter of that new-found world peace, the rosy image of this body had begun to fade. In fact, despite successes reaped across national boundaries through the many different organizations dedicated, among other things, to development, food distribution, elimination of disease, there were also increasingly stories of failure, stories of wars. But as Cardinal Renato Raffaele Martino, who headed the Holy See's permanent observer mission at the United Nations in those years, once told us,
the United Nations has not always succeeded in setting up effective means for the just resolution of international conflicts, nor have its policies for development always been positive. For instance, from 1945 to today, 187 conflicts have been counted, with more than 40 million victims. Mankind has known, since 1945, only 60 days of complete peace. And at this moment, there are 41 centers of war on our globe. And if the nations are not perfect, neither is the United Nations, for its vision and accomplishments are the fruit born of the participating parties. This is not reason enough to abandon the United Nations. When a sick person dies in an emergency room, we do not destroy the hospital. So, any talk of dismantling the United Nations because of its flaws or imperfections is a serious error. The United Nations is like a mirror, which reflects the face of the nations of the world. And if the nations are not perfect, neither is the United Nations.
But let's listen to Pope John Paul's own words on that occasion, 20 years after his first address, with a far frailer voice, as you'll notice in a moment.
My visit to the United Nations came on the 50th anniversary of its founding, 30 years after my predecessor, Pope Paul VI, spoke there and called for no more war, war never again. This is the task now facing the United Nations, and one which should see the organization transform itself into a true family of nations.
A true family of nations where every culture and tradition would then be able to make its own contribution to the human family, John Paul II stressed. One which would preserve its particular identity, its self-respect and dignity, while denouncing forms of ideological nationalism which sow hate and destruction rather than peace and progress. The Pope's words were viewed as encouraging. As the rector of the North American College at the time, Timothy Dolan, currently Archbishop of Milwaukee, picked up on following that visit.
I found his speech to the United Nations to border on the poetic, especially when he spoke about national rights, and especially when he spoke about freedom, the necessity of freedom. And the world needs that at this time. The United Nations needs optimism, confidence, hope. I don't think we realize the boost that a papal visit gives to the United Nations.
A boost, then, Pope John Paul certainly gave on that occasion, repeating those words he had so often chosen to pronounce, right from the start of his pontificate. Do not be afraid. Words he repeated once again in that last address of his to the United Nations. We must not be afraid of the future, he stressed. Together we must build a society more worthy of man, a civilization of love, which will witness a new springtime of the human spirit. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.